Good afternoon, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion of the conference. If at that time you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your phone. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I would now like to turn the call over to your host today, Ms. Amy Louvier. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for participating in the call on such short notice. We'll start out with a few brief remarks from MSHA Assistant Secretary Joe Main, and then we'll turn it over, open it up for questions.
Thank you. Appreciate you spending some time with us today. I just want to announce that, and I think you may have already received some notice of this action, but that MSHA has issued a notice of a pattern of violation to two coal mining operations under Section 104E of the Federal Mine Safety and Health Act of 1977. They are the Bledsoe Coal Corporation's Abner Branch Ryder Mine. It's located in Leslie County, Kentucky, and the new West Virginia Mining Company's Apache Mine, located in McDowell County, West Virginia. They are the first mines in the history of the Mine Act to be subject to the full effect of this enforcement action, which targets mines with chronic and persistent health and safety violations. Last November, the agency put 13 mines on notice that each had a potential pattern of violations. The 14th mine received similar notification in December after an agency audit revealed that the mine operator had failed to report a dozen injuries. MSHA conducted audits of that mine as well as other mines. All 14 mines that received potential pattern of violations notices implemented corrective action programs to reduce their significant and substantial violations known as S&S, the issuance rate of those. Subsequent to the POV negotiations, two of the 14 mines were temporarily idled. That was the Straight Creek Mine and the mine number 14, operated by National Coal Corporation. The first was operated by Ben Bennett. One ceased production, and one has not completed the evaluation process. Between January 3rd and March the 21st, 2011, MSHA conducted inspections of the 10 remaining mines. And of those, eight met the prescribed S&S goals, and two operations, who are now receiving the pattern of violations notices, failed to meet their goals by a significant margin. As a matter of fact, at the end of the process, the rate was actually higher than when MSHA served notice to those mines that they were on a potential pattern of violations. MSHA previously implemented major reforms to its POV process, which we have discussed in the past, which includes new screening criteria and a new review process that improves the agency's ability to identify problem mines. These two mines will be subject to Section 104E action under the Mine Act. And what takes place is that MSHA will issue a withdrawal order at a POV mine each time it issues an S&S violation. And the order remains in place until the violation is abated. An operator can be removed from the pattern of violation status after undergoing a complete, and I repeat, complete inspection without receiving an S&S violation. We announced also last week that we had created a new online tool for any mine operator in the country to use that will allow them to check their compliance history against the criteria that we use for the selection of mines. So going forward, all mine operators in this country will have a chance to constantly check what their compliance is with regard to the Mine Act, and in particular, against the pattern of violations, and will put them in a driver's seat to make their own determinations and decisions as to whether or not they wind up being selected as a pattern mine. With that, I will now open the line up for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. You will be announced prior to asking your question. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Your first question today comes from Jim Sharp of Sharp Media, LLC.
Good afternoon, Mr. Assistant Secretary. Thank you for doing this. Two questions. The first one is, about 2 or 3 years ago, wasn't another mine in West Virginia or Virginia put on a pattern so that this really isn't an historic first? That's the first part of the question. I can't remember the name of the mine, actually. And what they were on it for a short time, and then there was an expedited hearing, and they were off because the S&Ss were reduced. And the second part of the question is with regard to the screening tool. If I go to a if any mine is on that right now, are they subject to receiving a letter, a potential pattern of violations letter from MSHA, or does the potential pattern of violation letter only go out during the periods of time during the year when MSHA issues potential pattern letters? In other words, is it automatic that the letter goes out if they meet the criteria, or do you only do it during certain times of the year? Thank you.
Jim, we believe that this action will be the first that, that any mine is actually subject to the full measure of the provision of Section 104E of the Mine Act. There was a circumstance where there was, I think for a brief moment, a mine was provided notice, and that lasted, I don't even think, more than a day, and the mine was never actually subject to the full enforcement of the Section 104E of the Mine Act. And what we're saying here is that these two mines, we firmly believe, will be the first two mines fully subject to the application of Section 104E of the Mine Act.
Okay, understood.
Okay, the second point is what we had promised to the mining community, to Congress, to create a tool which would allow every mine in this country, miners in this country or others, to evaluate a mine's citation order history, their record, and to be able to determine whether or not they are subject to the potential pattern of violations actions with the criteria that would be provided as well to make those judgments again. That was the purpose of creating that tool. And we're hopeful that the mining community will use it, that mines who believe that they may have some problems take a hard look at what their compliance records are and implement health and safety management programs like many mine operators do every day of the week in this country to manage health and safety. So the tool is put out for use to hopefully change the way some mine operators do business and let them be in control of their own destiny. We are obligated under the regulations to do a screening for a potential pattern of violations once each year. That has not been enacted yet for this particular year, but we will follow that regulation.
Okay, so to follow up then, if they meet the criteria for a potential on the screening tool, that does not mean they're going to get a letter from MSHA. It just means that this serves notice on them that they need to do better. Am I right?
Yeah, Jim, just to let me clear up one issue here. That anytime MSHA does a selection of a mine for a potential pattern of violation, there's a lot of things that go into that process beyond just what numbers may show up on the screen. That is a starting point for a screening. All the numbers have to be validated, and there is work that takes place to make sure that we have the numbers right. And there's also a process of mitigating circumstances that are utilized once any screening takes place. So, again, I just want to reiterate, the tool that we have created is a tool of which mine operators, miners, or others can use to determine where they stand with regard to a potential pattern of violation. It is only common sense that if an operator finds themselves anywhere close to those benchmarks, that they would be making some major changes quickly.
Okay, so
to improve the health and safety of the monitor.
Okay, so they don't get a letter because there's more that you do to that you need to do in order to put them on the potential pattern, right? They don't get a letter, but if they see themselves on this screening tool and with an indication that they are a potential pattern violator, that just serves notice. The purpose of this is to serve notice on them, but it doesn't mean that you're going to take any particular action. I'm just trying to understand how this tool works.
Yes, Jim, you are correct to the extent that there's no letter that goes out as a result of the use of that specific screening tool, the web tool. That is a tool that we created solely for the purpose of the mining community, miners, mine operators, and others to use to determine where they stand with regard to the potential pattern.
Okay.
Before any notice ever goes out to a mine operator, in the way that we do apply the potential pattern of violation standards, we go through a thorough assessment process beyond what data comes up, even in our screenings, before
Thank
we ever
you.
Get to the
Thank you.
Point of issuing a letter. Does that help clear the...
Very much so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Tim Huber of the Associated Press.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Tim.
How bad were these two mines, and what message are you hoping to send out to the rest of the industry with this action today?
Well, Jim, I think the great disappointment is this, that they didn't take measures that they should have to have fixed their problems, improved the level of health and safety at those mines to avoid this this enforcement action. And I think if you look at what's happened here, there was 8 mines that went to work to put into effect health and safety management programs to clean up their act and to make major improvements in mine safety that put them on a more positive track and actually has a better mine for miners to go to work at. These two mines did not. And not only did they fail to take the appropriate actions, but as I had noted earlier, these mines wound up with a S&S rate that was higher than when they began.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, you know, some mine operators get it and some don't, and we have an obligation to enforce the mine law.
Mm-hmm.
And our plan is to move forward with the tools that Congress has created to bring about improved safety in the mining industry. I will say this, as I've said many times before, there is a large number of mines in this country that every day have health and safety management programs in place that monitor those, that do the necessary checks to find and fix conditions. And so a pattern of violation is never even a problem or an issue with them. And there's some that put themselves in a situation where they fail to comply with the law to the extent that they not only place their miners in jeopardy, they bring about additional enforcement action.
The when you talk about additional enforcement action, these two mines are going to be, they're going to be, anytime they do, you find something that's a problem, are you going to go in more often to them too? How is it actually, I understand you go in, you find an S&S violation, they have to shut down, leave until it's fixed. Is that going to, are you going to be in there all the time, or are you going to be, how does that work?
We're not going to be in there any less. I think Tim is probably about the best way to put it, but the way the system works is whenever MSHA goes to the mine to conduct an inspection, any violation that has been determined to be a significant and substantial violation will automatically be a closure order for that area of the mine that's affected by that particular violation, by that particular standard that's cited.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the entire mine.
Right.
Mines that have difficulty controlling their significant and substantial, or some people call them serious violations, is in great jeopardy that every violation that that they allow to happen, they're going to be that area of the mine is going to be shut down by a closure order, and it will be under closure order until such time as that particular condition that was cited is corrected.
Is that likely to result in these mines being able to function at all? Or, I mean, how bad are these two mines? What are they doing that's so...
Well, I could say this. I was just highly disappointed when I saw the stats on these mines, that whenever you serve such a notice on mines of such a threatening enforcement action that's pending if they don't change their ways, and you have two mines that wound up with a higher S&S rate than before the notice was sent to them, I think that raises great concerns about what that mine's doing to manage its health and safety program. And I say that with regard to, if you look at the other mines who took a different approach, implemented health and safety programs, managed their mines, and were able to successfully reduce the serious violations that were occurring in their mines, it's some got it and took appropriate action, and some didn't.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
Thank you. And your next question today comes from Jim Carroll of the Louisville Courier-Journal.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Fine, Jim.
Hey, I just follow up on the last caller's questions. I'm just, for the layperson, can we explain what a withdrawal order is? Is it just for where the violation occurs in that part of the mine? It's not a total closure of the mine. Number two, are both of these mines closed now? And number partially or totally. And number three, following up on what people were asking before, in terms of how bad actors these guys were. Now you don't want to use that term, but what kind? Can you tell us specifically what kinds of violations we're looking at? Was it accumulations of excessive accumulations of dust? Was it roof controls, ventilation problems? Can you just give us a little bit of that? Thanks.
Hey, Jim, I'm going to try to keep up with the questions. The first one was.
How the withdrawal affects, is it just for the area where a violation occurred, or are these withdrawal orders you're talking about telling everybody to get out of the entire mine and it's closed?
Yes, to answer the first question, these are general withdrawal orders that would be applicable to the specific violation and specific conditions that would be cited. Let me give you two or three examples. If MSHA goes in and finds that the section is not properly ventilated, there would be a order on the area that's affected by that violation regarding the ventilation. If they went into mine and found an escape way was not being maintained, there would be a closure order that would be affecting the specific escape way area that would be affected. I think the significance here is that what may be normally a citation with time to abate in most cases will now be an automatic order for that particular condition for that particular area. And this would unquestionably affect a mine's normal operations. One of them in particular, let's say, was a belt line that had combustible materials around it, where the order would be affecting that belt line, and that belt line would be automatically shut down because of the order. So these are significant violations. Even though they're not the whole mine, they can have major impact on the operation of the mine.
And are either of these operations closed right now?
One is, as we understand it, and we're trying to get an understanding of exactly what the mine operator intends to do.
Which of the two?
That would be the Apache mine in West Virginia. The second mine is operational, which is the Abner Branch mine.
And the types and totals of violations, can you tell us, characterize them in some way so we know what we're... what we're dealing with here?
Jim, and I'm going to try just to brief these through. We may have to do some follow-up here, but These, first off, these would be violations that are considered S&S.
Right.
So more serious violations in a mine. They do not include the non-S&S violations that are used for both the purpose of being put on a potential pattern of violations or for getting off. And I'm just scouring through some of the conditions that accumulations of combustible material, I believe float coal dust, electrical violations, there's a...
Is this for both mines? Or are you referring to one specifically?
The one I'm referring to now is Abner Branch.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of skimming through the violations list here. Yeah, there's quite a number of them here that we'll make these available. I think probably the best way to do it. Belt conveyor not being maintained in proper alignment, the accumulations of combustible materials, wasn't formally approved roof control plan. Stress cracks found in two of the three cribs installed.
In where?
This was two of the three cribs installed, under a stress crack. Wasn't secured against the mine roof, and it means that they weren't put in there to for the intended purposes of effectively holding the mine roof up. Insulation was torn, exposing bare copper wires on the cable providing power to the roof bolting machine.
Nice.
A loose-ended drop-down piece of sandstone measuring 32 inches by 51 inches was observed. So you had a combination of electrical problems, roof control problems, combustible material,
Is it safe to say Abner was a dangerous mine?
I think it's safe to say that Abner was identified as a mine that was a mine that had a chronic history of a pattern of violations that caught it in the potential pattern violations process, and that the conditions that existed were serious conditions that put them there, particularly the S&S violations, and they failed to take appropriate action to improve the conditions of the mine, to protect their miners, to avoid a pattern of violations. And it's hard to compare, you know, one mine sometimes against another, but in terms of the standard, they met the standard to be identified, and they failed to take the appropriate action to avoid enforcement of Section 104E of the Act. Did I get all three of your questions, Jim? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess I'm still wrestling with the practical effect if you are over at Abner this afternoon, or tomorrow, or the next day, what the practical effect of this is on daily operations at Abner and at the West Virginia mine. Are they going to be stopping and going and stopping and going, and is MSHA going to maintain, I think this falls up on another question earlier, maintain a steady presence there so you can, you know, if they're doing roof bolting, you can go in there every day and see if they're doing it right, or if this stuff is just, you know, every time they get an S&S, you're going to give them a withdrawal order. I'm just trying to get a sense of how intense this oversight's going to be now that they're on this list.
Jim, I think the other part of this we probably haven't talked through as much, but there's two pieces to the S&S violations. One is that when MSHA is in at mine, anytime they find an S&S violation, it will be a closure order for that area of the mine. More importantly is that to get off of a pattern of violations,
mm-hmm.
the mine has to go through a complete clean inspection.
Right.
I mean, wall-to-wall inspection with not one S&S violation. So I think the significance of this is that mine, until it has a complete clean inspection, has the threat of a order being issued every time MSHA finds an S&S violation at that mine. And I think that is a pretty significant action that no mine operator in this country, I don't think, would want to have. And it is the, realistically, when you look at it, it's one of the most severe orders that is on a continual basis that can be applied applied out of mine. So there is some real consequence here about this action. And MSHA will be in that mine, too. And what I was saying earlier is that no less often. I mean, we're going to be doing our complete inspections at that mine. I think it's safe to say that a mine that has been identified as a pattern of violation would expect to get more inspections and not less. But at the end of the day, they have to complete a clean inspection to remove the pattern of violations actions of every S&S violation being an order. They have to accomplish something they haven't been able to accomplish, at least on the short term here, with regard to having a complete inspection with no S&S violations. And I think that's a pretty heavy lift for any mine operator to have.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Steve Hooks of Platts.
Yes, Joe. Okay, let me get this straight now. Abner Branch continues to operate. Apache is shut down. What measures are you? What's going to happen at Apache? Did they have the same kind of violations as Abner Branch did? Hello.
Yes. Hold on 1 second. Yeah, I was just looking over the violations that was issued at Apache, and. We're looking at a number of violations involving a roof drill being operated that's not being maintained in safe condition, a roof fall that occurred, weekly examinations was not being conducted as required, and these examinations are important. And this is not just a single ventilation or examination standard they failed to meet. The operator was not following an approved ventilation plan at the mine.
But that's the one that's shut.
This is the one that is shut down. That's correct. This mine. This mine did not request a conference at the closure of the pattern of violations process period, unlike all the other mines. The other mine that was also identified as a potential pattern of violations mine.
So they've kind of closed shop, it appears.
Well, that's the indication that we have, but we don't know. And one thing that we can't do is walk away from a mine that has met the criteria for the enforcement action. The mine is still there. And the next step will be up to what the management of mine decides to do.
Yeah. Okay. Now, not to beat on a dead horse here, but when you say these are the first mines in the history of the Mine Act to be subject to the full effect of this enforcement action, would you go over that again? What do you mean by that?
Well, what we mean by that is that the pattern violation has been in the Mine Act since 1977. And the provisions calls for it's the full effect of the Mine Act for once a mine has been determined to be a pattern of violation of mine, for MSHA to, on every inspection they conduct at the mine, to issue a closure order for violations that are determined to be significant and substantial. These mines will be the first mines in the country that we know of that will be subject to the full measure of that enforcement action.
Which you described.
Which is the, an enforcement action is that for every S&S violation that MSHA finds at the mine, a closure order for that area will be issued. And an S&S, or excuse me, and a closure order will be issued for every S&S violation that has been found until the mine operator has a complete inspection, of what we call wall-to-wall inspection of the mine.
So in other words, subject to closure orders for the pattern of violations is what you're talking about.
They will be considered to be on a pattern, and and every S&S violation will be a closure order until such time the mine completes a complete inspection without a single S&S violation being cited.
And those other mines that you listed, you said two of them remain closed. The 13 mines that were put on noticed. You said two of the 14 mines were temporarily idled. Which ones were those again, please?
Those were the Straight Creek mine, which is in Kentucky, and number 14 mine operated by National Coal Corporation.
Who owns Straight Creek?
Pardon?
Who owns the Straight Creek mine?
That is, the owner's listed as Ben Bennett.
Ben Bennett, okay.
There is a third mine that was in this category, which is the Freedom Energy number one mine that is under a different pattern of violation action currently, and that's the 108 injunctive action that was issued here just a few months ago.
Which of those two mines is closed, cease production?
I have listed the Straight Creek mine is idle.
Okay. And the other one is passed, and the other one, National Coal's number 14.
Number 14
back.
Mine is idle. And those mines were idled after they received the pattern of violations notice, from what I understand.
So they were both still idled?
Those mines, to my knowledge, are still idled, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ken Ward of the Charleston Gazette.
Two questions. First, are any of the violations that were used to establish the pattern of violations at these two mines, are any of them under contest currently?
Now, Ken, is your question the ones that was used to establish the pattern of violations or potential pattern of violations?
Both.
Okay. As far as the latter, I do not believe they contested any of the citations. With regard to Abner Branch, I think they may have contested some violations, but it would not, as I understand it, made any difference as far as the outcome of them not meeting the reductions.
So I guess what I was trying to get at it is there any concern that because of a ruling by the commission or an ALJ that these pattern of violations orders at these two mines could be thrown out?
Ken, our folks have looked at the citations that have been cited and are comfortable that they are appropriately cited.
Thanks. My other question was, forgive me if this is in the press materials and I just missed it, but I'm wanting you to understand the time period that was used for calculating the S&S rate achieved after the potential pattern. Because it looks like it wouldn't have been very long, and so I'm wondering what that time period was, and along with that, I'm wondering what steps you were taking to ensure a longer-term improvement, especially given the remarks that the Inspector General has made regarding how mines have tended to get put on a potential pattern, improve over a short time, get taken off of that, and then improve and then get worse and kind of regress.
Wait. Ken. The answer to your second question first is that we have made clear in the criteria that we published on the new process that any mine that does make a potential pattern is going to be subject to other pattern reviews in the future and as well to the impact inspection program. And I just want to remind folks who are on the call that the pattern of violations is only one of the enforcement programs that we have that is used to both identify and beef up enforcement at mines that have displayed a characteristic of noncompliance to the point that we ought to be out there spending more time. I can tell you that these mines will be evaluated for potential impact inspections if they have regression in their programs. And if they have regressions in their programs that puts them back on the potential pattern cycle, that will happen. And we're going to pay attention more, and I agree with what the Inspector General had raised, that we need to be looking more long-term at mines that wind up in these special enforcement activities, and we fully intend to do that. With regard to the question of what time period that we looked at to determine the S&S reduction rate to get off of the pattern, that is a period that's established in a criteria. Yeah, there is some different timelines that's involved in the review process. And I think the maximum time is 120 days. The time frame can be shorter than that. And I think the notice went to the mine operators in November. And the review process started once the operator submitted a plan. So from that time forward, the evaluation process was in place.
So ballparking it, give or take different dates for different ones of those mines, you're talking maybe a four-month period, something like that.
The maximum that they have after they submit the plan, Ken, is 90 days. If that answers the question as far as the review period.
It does. Thank you.
After they submit the plan.
Thank you. If I could ask one other thing, Joe, in developing these, the criteria and trying to come up with how you'll implement these things, how concerned are you, if at all, that mines that are being put on a potential pattern can avoid the much more drastic hammer of that pattern of violations order without really having to improve very much? Are you looking at setting an even higher bar than you already have? It appears all they have to do is improve their S&S rate. Do you think that maybe some even higher bar than that, maybe no violations for an entire inspection or something like that, should be set?
Ken, I think if let me just walk through our strategy, and I think this will make some sense. With regard to the pattern, we have announced a plan. We have announced actually a proposed rule that will change the whole dynamics of this, that puts mines, that would put mines on a quicker pace once they're identified on a pattern violation if they meet the criteria. But if you look at the strategy, we have a regular inspections that we identify performances of mines. Then we have our impact inspection process, which we kick in after Upper Big Branch, that I have made clear is going to be a continual part of how we do business. That really has us, both at the district level and national level, looking over the landscape to determine what mines are exhibiting problems, whether it's excessive violations, whether high accident rates, whether there's anonymous complaints coming from the mine, whether we feel there is advanced notice inspections, if they have particular problems with roof control, ventilation, and that is a thing that we are doing constantly to identify those mines and take quicker action as a way we do business more than I think we've ever done as far as an agency. Those that rise to the level of a pattern of violations, as noted in the action we took in prior to November to strengthen both the criteria to get on and the performance needed to get off, that is a tough standard. I don't think that mines really like to find themselves getting these potential pattern of violations letter, nor they should they. And then, of course, the use of the pattern at the end of the day for those who fail. And I think that what we're trying to tell the mining industry, we're serious about using this tool that Congress created. What I think is happening in the mining industry is a recognition of these tougher enforcement tools that I don't think that mines like the fact when they're identified as a impact inspection mine. And I think it's changing the way that a number of these mines are starting to do business by putting back into place mine health and safety programs and examining their own mines and not leaving that important task to MSHA. So I think overall, you know, as you go forward, these enforcement actions get tougher, the impact inspections, the pattern of violations, and the one at the very end, which we've used at that you talked about, the Freedom Energy mine. We're trying to send a message to the mining industry, you know, you do not want to go down this path. And we're hopeful that what's going to happen as we apply these tools, that we're going to make mines safer and change the culture of those who decide that they're going to flaunt the law.
If I could just follow up on that, Joe, you said you're starting to see a change and you're seeing people in the industry being concerned about not going down this path with MSHA. At the same time, in this instance, you had these two mines that were told, you know, we're going to put you on a pattern of violations, and then they turn around and have 6% and 5% more SNS violation rates. And if I believe I'm correct, that there have been quite a number of mines that when you've gone back for a second or in some cases even a third round of impact inspections, that their SNS rates have gotten worse in that situation. How concerned are you that you have a segment of the industry, I don't know how large, but you have a segment of the industry that is not getting it here?
You pointed a concern that we have, Ken. There are some in the industry that don't get it, and I think we had two that exposed themselves here with this potential pattern violation process. I can tell you what we are doing in terms of those mines. We get up every day around here and we take a look at the numbers. And when we see mines as starting to get out of control, we're not hesitating to employ tools that was never before used or never used the way that we're employing them, to the point that the enforcement of the Mine Act, to the extent we have the tools, is going to change their behavior or something's going to give. I think, as we pointed out, there was some mines at the outset of this, when they received the pattern notice, just shut down. One of them was Great Creek, which had a sizable number of orders that we had issued at that mine, both 104D orders, 104B orders, but made a decision for whatever reason to not to continue operate. I understand that many of those miners, if not all those miners, wound up going to work at other mines during that time frame. But there are mine operators that don't get it. And one that I've talked about, I remember when we did the afternoon shift inspection at the Sand Creek mine in September of last year and walked in, I think total surprise to the mine operator, late in the evening when they thought even we wouldn't be even making afternoon shift inspections, and found that they had their ventilation controls down, that they were mining, and the inspector, when he walked up on this section, saw so much dust being generated that he couldn't even hardly make out the continuous miner, which is a huge piece of equipment. Those are the kind of conditions that lead to explosions and black lung disease. And we said that we really need some more tools in our tool bag to help us deal with mines like that. And those are some of the things we talked about in the legislative activities last year. So, yeah, you're right. There's some mines that just don't get it. There's some mines that are getting the message. We're going to hold them hostage to the programs they put in place, because if they start changing their ways and those mines start drifting back in the wrong direction, we're not going to hesitate to use our other tools, such as the impact inspection tool.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
We have time for a couple more questions. If Melissa of WYMT is on the line, could you move her up in the queue, please?
Absolutely. Melissa, your line is open.
Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm sorry if I'm coming in on this late, but we wanted to know specifically what is in place for these two mines, especially the Abner Branch mine. It's about 20 minutes from our viewing area. So we wanted to know what specifically is next for this mine.
Well, I think if you look at how the Mine Act is structured, with the notice that the mine operator is receiving, every time a MSHA inspector makes an inspection at that mine and observes a violation that is considered significant substantial, S&S, that will, instead of being a citation, will be an automatic closure order. And the area that will be covered by the closure order is the area affected by that particular violation. And to have the pattern of violations actions removed from that mine, the mine will have to go through a complete inspection of the mine and have not one S&S violation. That's the statute.
Are they still in operation right now, or are they idled?
Yes, they're active.
Okay. Okay. And are they taking the steps as of right now to fix those, or did you say they're one of the ones that are contesting some of the violations?
I understand that there was some violations contested, but I also understand from what was reported to me that it would not have made any difference at the end of the day with them meeting their reduction requirement. This was a mine that was even higher at the end of the process than they were at the beginning.
Okay, so it's almost as if the problems are getting worse, more or less.
Well, you know, it has changed. They went from being on a potential pattern of violation, where they had control of their destiny, where they had the opportunity, like the other mines did, in implementing a program to clean up the mine and to reduce their significant substantial violations, and are now in a position where, under the criteria that's established and carrying out the intent of law, they're now served with a notice that they're on a pattern of violation, which requires MSHA to issue the closure orders as I described.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
One more question, please.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ellen Smith of Mine Safety and Health News.
I've got two questions. First of all, I looked these mines up on your new POV reporting tool on the database, and these mines are not listed as being on POV status. So if mine operators need to check, or we, the press, want to check on mines and their status, how frequently is MSHA going to be updating this database so we can keep up to date on these mines? And the second question has to do specifically with the Apache mine. I know that MSHA has had problems with this mine in the past. It's got a significant amount of delinquent penalties, $167,000. So I was wondering, what steps did MSHA take in dealing with Brandy Horvath, who's the controller of this mine, in trying to help this person prevent this mine getting on a POV notice? Did MSHA have meetings with the controller, or did this controller or company just kind of blow MSHA off and not have any meetings and go on business as usual?
You're correct that you may at times run the PPOV process in a mine that maybe have identified to be on a pattern in November, may not show up for different reasons as far as some change in their the enforcement numbers by the time you hit April, Ellen. And we're updating the data on our base, I think the 15th of the month. So for the prior month, there's about a 2-week lapse time to for that data to, you know, to update itself. So it'll be a monthly update.
And then on the, you know, what MSHA might have done regarding the Apache mine and just because of previous enforcement problems?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know specifically what we have done at the particular mines. I know that we have had, you know, at some of these different mines, different things that we try to do to encourage the mine operators to improve their compliance behavior. I know that this mine, as well as the other mines, it was notified, had opportunities to meet with the MSHA district personnel. They had opportunities to submit plans to improve their health and safety performance at the mine. They had opportunities to utilize the help that was there. As a matter of fact, I remember I got a letter in from one of the mines that was put on a pattern. It was in the southeast. It was a cement plant, actually. That at the end of the basically the letter said they didn't like it when they received a pattern of violation, but really appreciate the work that MSHA did with them and working with them. And at the end of the day, they feel they're going to be a better operation with regard to having better health and safety programs in place as a result of the PPOV process. So I know that we've had, you know, folks out talking to, you know, the mine operators, encouraging them to put in the – our job is to make these mines safer using the tools that we have. And we would like to see these mines operating safely. But at the end of the day, you know, they are under the control and decisions of the various mine operators.
Well, what do you do with people like, you know, the Apache mine operator that has so many delinquent penalties, now is on a POV, the mine is idled or shut down. It almost seems, you know, what tools are left for MSHA at this point? I mean, it owes, you know, almost $175,000 in delinquent penalties from this controller. Would MSHA consider going to U.S. District Court for this mine like it's done in other cases?
Well, I think you raise a good question, Ellen. I don't know what our next step will be as far as the penalties. I know on the front end of this, to make sure that we protect the miners, that was our first step in using. And that's what the pattern process was designed by Congress to be used for chronic violators to have those mine operators act differently and clean up their act so that miners have a safe workplace. And when we engage in the pattern of violations process, it's for the purpose of improving health and safety for the nation's miners. And we're hopeful that the mine operators do that. With regard to the penalties of this particular mine, it's something that we'll need to take a look at. But, you know, generally the way the system works is that delinquent payments are turned over to the Treasury for collection, but, you know, that doesn't mean that we're not looking at other things, which we are. But I'm not sure in this particular case. And the other thing, Ellen, is that this is one of the areas that we thought that improvements were needed in the legislation that we have to deal with folks who don't pay their bills, to provide some more immediate tools to deal with that. We'll take a look at what you've raised, but there is a need for improvement for mine operators that run out on their penalties.
Thank you.
Well, we are out of time. Appreciate you participating in this call.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Thank you for joining.